I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from the Wonders of Wildlife Aquarium in the heart of Springfield, Missouri. Formerly dubbed the Johnny Morris Wonders of Wildlife National Museum and Aquarium, the aquarium was the vision of Johnny Morris, founder of Bass Pro Shops. Soon after it opened, it was voted Best New Attraction in America by USA Today and annually ranks among the 10 best aquariums in the United States. The 1.5 million gallon aquarium showcases 35,000 individual fish, amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals in a series of themed areas including an ocean shipwreck, a Louisiana swamp, an Ozark forest, and the Amazon rainforest. Discover how you can swim with sharks, experience truly close-up interactions with Gentoo penguins, and equally engaging sign up for a back-of-the-house aquarium tour that includes the world-class sea turtle rescue program. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me and associate producer Randy Hare for our most fascinating aquarium exploration. Our back-of-the-house tour starts with Lauren Lockwood, a senior penguin keeper at the Wonders of Wildlife, followed by a short chat with photo team member Gwenda Priest, a fourth-year student at Ozarks Technical College. We'll then head behind the curtain for an incredibly fascinating and informative tour of what happens 24/7 behind the scenes at the aquarium with Ben Houghton, curator of life sciences.
My name is Lauren Lockwood. I'm a senior keeper here at Wonders of Wildlife. Previous background experience at a zoo here in Springfield, Dickerson Park Zoo, and I work here with the penguins, so I am one of the penguin keepers.
Penguins know you and like you?
Yes. Well, you know, I bring them food, so they like whoever brings them food, so typically, yes, I'm on pretty good terms with them. So guests can come through and see the penguins every single day, but we do have behind-the-scenes tours that we do several times a week, two times a day, and that is a little bit more up close and personal, which is pretty cool. They get to have a little bit more one-on-one time with me or one of the other keepers. They get to see them get fed up close and personal. They get that nice fishy smell that you don't get from the outside. So it's pretty special to be able to do that.
And you have a go-to website to learn more?
WondersOfWildlife.org. We actually have a 24/7 penguin cam, so you can watch the penguins at any time of the day. Now, we do shut the lights off at night, but yeah, you can see them live. You can see us cleaning. It's great fun. My mom watches all the time.
How many tours a day do you do?
The only tour days that we don't have are Tuesdays and Thursdays, but every other day we have penguin tours at 12:15 and 2:15. Lauren Lockwood.
Lauren, thank you so much.
Thank you. Foraging behaviors, catching fish in the water. Pretty normal for them to all eat together in a group. It would be the same way in the wild as well. So these are our Gentoo penguins. We have 18 penguins here at Wonders of Wildlife. We have 10 males and 8 females. Males are typically a little bit bigger than the females. They stand about 2.5 feet tall. Females are about 1.5 to 2 feet tall. They are the third largest penguin species in the world, so emperor and king penguins are a little taller than them, standing around 3 to 4 feet tall, but these guys are number 3. They are one of 18 penguin species in the world, and they do live in very cold climates. So there are penguins in the world that live where it's very warm, but these guys live where it's very, very chilly. They live in Antarctica. It's not obviously as cold here as it would be in Antarctica. We do keep it right now around 40 degrees. The water is also around 40 or 42 degrees. We will decrease the temperature in here just a little bit in the wintertime. Obviously, again, we can't keep it as cold as Antarctica, but it still suits them just fine. All of our penguins are captive born and raised, so none of them are from the wild. These guys are also one of the fastest penguin species in the world. They can swim up to 22 miles an hour. Their predators include orcas and sea lions and seals, so they gotta be able to outmaneuver those big predators. So that's why they can swim so fast. It also really helps them when they're catching their fish. They eat herring, capelin in the wild, they eat shrimp and squid, a lot of food groups that are in big groups, and they work together as a team. They can dive up to 400 feet down to either eat or avoid predators, and they can hold their breath for up to 7 minutes for the same reason. So these guys go through two main seasons throughout the year. We've got breeding season, and then we have molting season in the fall. Molting is the act of losing feathers and growing back new ones. So in a 2 week span, at the end of summer, early fall, they go through a catastrophic molt. And they will, all of their old feathers will be pushed out by all of their new feathers. In an inch span on their body, square inch span, they have between 70 and 100 feathers. So they've got a lot of feathers to molt. So it's beneficial for them to molt in that short time frame, but it's very intense for them because they really don't eat during that time and they don't get in the water. So they're very susceptible to cold and they're very susceptible to predators. But they gotta be able to have a very, very thick feathers, and they gotta be able to have really nice feathers throughout the year in order to survive those cold temperatures. So for them, everyone molting at once, they're less likely to get picked off by predators. But it is kind of an unpleasant time. It's not very fun. They kind of swell up, their skin does, like they're having an allergic reaction, and that helps get those feathers moving for them. So they actually will mostly stand kind of back here. They just kind of separate themselves. A lot of times, these guys will pair up for the year, and breeding season starts in the spring, and wherever those they build their nests in here, that's kind of where they go over to molt. We have a couple different rock piles here in the exhibit, but during breeding season, it kind of looks like a beach. We have enough rocks that everyone can build as big of nests as they want to, but it's very hard to clean around. It's a very disgusting time to be a penguin keeper. So we don't leave that amount of rocks all the time. It's just unnecessary. But some of them do like sleeping on the rocks. Not all of them do. So we do allow them to have little nest piles throughout the year. They are separated by armband. That helps. I can tell them pretty well apart without that, but especially with their armband, I can tell them all apart. Males, we categorize by putting their armbands on their right side, and females are on the left, and then everyone has two different color beads on those armbands as well. And it's just like little beads on zip ties, and it's on a part of their wing that it can move a little bit, but it's not cutting off any blood circulation, and it's not inhibiting them from swimming around. So yeah. I really like Cornelia, her armband is yellow and brown, and then Dora, her armband is yellow and pink. Dora is also our smallest penguin we have here. She weighs just under 9 pounds. She's full grown. She's just really small. Our largest male, largest penguin here, weighs nearly 20 pounds. He's not overweight, he's just really big. So, but Dora's really cute. She's just this tiny, petite little penguin. We do a lot of education with them. So we get them involved. Since I've been here, I started this summer, so I haven't seen a lot with the Wolf School yet, but I know we're pretty heavily involved. They're heavily involved with us, and we're heavily involved with them. I actually started volunteering here when I was like 12, when it was open the first time, and then I volunteered all throughout middle and high school, and then I got my degree in wildlife conservation and management. I worked at Dickerson Park Zoo for nearly 7 years, and then I got the job here, so I've kind of come full circle. So coming here was a little bit different. I don't have a whole lot of bird experience, but I have learned a lot. I have researched a lot. It's good that they keep to themselves. Like they approach us for food, but they're not really seeking us out for companionship, which is what we want. We don't necessarily want them to rely on us for their companionship. They're definitely content finding their companionship in squabbles with their own group. So we're good with that. I also work with our bats here, our Seba's bats and our African straw bats. You guys finished all your food. It's always a sad time when they finish. Dora, her band is pink yellow. She swims around just like the other of all of them, and she keeps up with them really, really well, even though she's small. We do have a female named Reese in the back. She stays in the back corner mostly. She's 31 years old. She's our oldest penguin we have here at Wonders of Wildlife. Normally 15 to 20 years in captivity. So she's quite old. She moves a little slower than everyone else. She used to be in the water a whole lot because it's just a chaotic mess and she doesn't want to deal with that foolishness. She's like, nope, I'm good. So we make sure that she gets hand fed. She does get in the water some, but right now she is molting. So she's kind of like off by herself. Everyone else, our second oldest, we've got a couple that are 21, and then everyone is on average between like 8 and 15. So they're all from different zoos. We got them in, I believe, like 3 or 4 different groups when the museum opened. Yeah, from different zoos all over the country. I know New York was one, maybe Bronx, Zoo. I don't know the other places. So these guys are near threatened in the wild. There's over like 320,000 breeding pairs in the wild. So they're not at a point where we necessarily need to replenish the population. So as far as what we do, Bentley, sweet boy. I like Bentley too. He's just kind of a sweet, like he doesn't like taking food from me very well, but he like tries and then he gets kind of nervous. And then the others are like, try to take it from him and he doesn't fight. So he's just kind of a sweet little boy. I know, I'm all done. I don't have any more. To kind of help keep the population sustainable, right now we're at capacity. We don't need any more penguins here. Most zoos are at capacity as well. We are also part of the SSP Species Survival Plan with these guys, and we're an accredited facility. So genetics are a big deal. So these guys are healthy, but their genetics are not necessarily like top priority for breeding. So it really wouldn't be super ethical for us to be breeding these guys. It literally would just be because it'd be cute penguin babies. And we don't need more at the moment. So if we needed to replenish populations because genetics are tracked throughout the United States, it would be the top breeding pairs that we would breed to help populations in the wild. And right now we don't have that. We've got a couple fairly valuable genetic ones, but at the moment it's mostly just we have who we have. It's based on who they're related to. How many siblings they have. That's way deeper than me. But I do know it's like based on who the parents are and then how many siblings they've had. And then it's like if there's these parents have had tons and tons and tons of babies, probably don't need to have any more. But if there's been some that are like very healthy, very strong, and they haven't had a whole lot of babies, it can be tracked of like different traits. Kind of similar to if you're tracking traits for even like domestic dogs and cats and stuff like that. It's not exactly the same, but like you're breeding for, I want my Doberman to have really long, tall ears or something like that, or things like that, but wild traits is what you're looking for. They always act like they're starving, but we monitor their diet based on the time of year, based on if they're leaving stuff, if they're not coming up and they're not really taking food from us, we'll decrease their diet. They have been coming up like this the last few days, so we probably will increase their diet just a little bit next week. So, yeah, it ebbs and flows.
Who are you and what do you do here?
Hi, I'm Gwen DePriest. I'm on the photo team. I've been here for 3 years.
How did you end up being on that team?
So, I got on the photo team because I took photography in high school, and then there was a job open, and I was like, well, I don't know if I'll get this job. I'm just gonna apply for it anyway. And then I waited for like probably half a year and they were like, hey, we're doing interviews. Do you wanna come in? I guess so.
So are you local or?
Yeah, I grew up here. I grew up in Springfield. Both my parents work at schools here. So I've been here my whole life.
What's next? Do you have any plans? Or do you take photos of anything in it? Or just is it primarily penguins? And then what else do you wanna take pictures of or do?
My main job here is to take photos of our penguins, our shark dives, and then we have a green screen upstairs at the beginning of the museum. I do that. But mostly I am in school I'm in culinary school at OTC right now. So this is not actually my long-term plan, but it's honestly the best college job I could ask for.
So you're doing it while you're in school, basically?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. What school are you
in? I go to OTC. It's Ozarks Tech.
Okay.
My name is Ben Houghton. I am the curator of life sciences here for Wonders of Wildlife.
You can dive with sharks.
Yeah, so you can dive with sharks. Shark dive program, which is through SeaTrek. So how you get involved with that, you book a time slot. Our dive team comes down, grabs you. You get a little brief of what you're going to see, what you're going to do. And then they have these big helmets that they slide over your head and you get to enter the water and you have essentially a 365-degree view of what's in the exhibit. And you don't need to have any dive certs for it. Everything's trained here and you get an up-close and personal experience. And the sharks and all the fish, some of the smaller fish will swim right up in you in the cage, and the sharks will come really close up to you. You can also do like a feeding frenzy, which is when you guys are in the tank and then our team feeds the animals and everything gets a little bit more exciting because everybody wants to eat. So it's a cool little experience.
What type of sharks are they?
So we have sand tigers, sand bars, and we have a nurse shark in this, and one nurse. And two southern stingrays, kind of the big guys in here. Where we're going is essentially our aquatic holding, which is a space where all of our animals we get for the aquarium go through first for quarantine. So when we come in here, there's a foot bath here. We just want to walk in the foot bath. So we're a little empty right now, but this is a space we usually kind of have up and running for a variety of stuff. Behind us, we have a holding system for our penguins. If we ever need to pull them off exhibit for treatment, it's a big refrigerated room set up just for them. But we have a variety of different sized exhibits. These are like 900 gallon aquariums. And here we have a flat-headed catfish who's getting some treatment for some of the sores on his sides. So he gets seen by our vet staff 3 times a week. Animals coming in, there's some fish going through quarantine right now to go to our coral exhibit. Same with any kind of treatment, small isolated areas. We have a team for this area of 4 animal care professionals that manage this room independently from our actual aquarium to try to keep it very separate because it's quarantine. We don't want to transfer anything over there. So they have their own food prep, diet prep area. Largest system here. When filled up, it's about 30,000 gallons of water. It's a really cool program we get to be a part of, especially because we're in the middle of Missouri. You wouldn't expect there to be Colston sea turtles here, but through it, a lot of really great partnerships with New England Aquarium, their sea turtle program, Turtles Fly 2 that donates their time and pilots to fly turtles to us. They get them to us. We provide them the best care we can, medical care, attention, get them rehabbed back to the point where they're at, and then get them sent back to the ocean, which is really rewarding for the team. Kind of brings us all together as one. Right now in here we have, this is a zebra shark. She's a female zebra shark. Since we are an ASIA-accredited aquarium, we work a lot with what's called SSPs, or Species Survival Plans. The mission is to make sure that we are captively rearing animals and keeping genetics of animals that are endangered, like this shark. So we were part of that program where they recommend different breedings with different animals. So we had another zebra shark that is in our ring exhibit that we see earlier, and she has valuable genetic DNA. So they wanted to swap her with this shark that was over at the Omaha Aquarium, which is about 6 hours away from us. She was slotted to breed with her brother. So she came over to us to live here, and our girl went over there to work on help saving her species. But it's part of this bigger program called STAR, which helps to reinduce their pups back to the wild. So,
again, what type of shark is that?
This is a zebra shark.
Where is it native to?
They're Indo-Pacific, Indonesia, over in that area. They have this really cool program where zoos and aquariums work together like we have with the SSP programs, breed these animals, and they're shark, they lay egg species, so their eggs get shipped over to these research things in the field, and a team grows them up and then releases them back into the wild. I don't know if you guys have seen much of what a back-of-house space looks like. We have a ton of what looks like really weird equipment everywhere. It's all designed to help keep our water as clean and clear and as best quality for our animals as possible. We have a team along with our life sciences team that takes care of all this stuff. What's in front of us is a big protein skimmer, which removes all the organic waste out of it through a system of bubbles. We come here every day, we take care of the animals in our systems, but what we're really taking care of is all the bacteria that makes it the system healthy for our animals. So this is a kind of unique type of biological filter, which we grow all this really good beneficial bacteria that turns all the fish's waste and ammonia into stuff that's not going to hurt it and remove it. With that, we do water quality testing in all these systems multiple times during the week. We have a water quality lab we might see a little bit later. We also have some large RO unit, which is reverse osmosis, which means it pulls all of the kind of imperfections and negative stuff out of the water and gets us a clean source. This is extremely important for like our corals, our live plants, and our jellyfish. We have quite a large jellyfish propagation room we'll see in a second. And this all kind of feeds that. Our sea turtle rehab program has been a really cool partnership with us, Bass Pro, NOAA, Turtles Fly 2, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. All of us work together to be able to help rehab these turtles.
Mostly Florida sea turtles?
So the turtles we have gotten in the past come from North Carolina, and it's a cold, stunning event. What happens up there, there's this big cove that the turtles like to swim into when the water's warm, and then they get these cold saps and the turtles kind of panic and they can't get out of the cove to the warmer water in the ocean. So then they get cold stunned and they come up on shore, and it leads to a lot of problems with ammonia, various issues, boat strikes, a whole bunch of stuff kind of happens from it. So they go through an initial check at the New England.
What species typically?
So typically we do loggerhead sea turtles. And it's really cool, I think, that we get to do those species because they're a really big turtle. I mean, turtles we get coming in are 50 to 70 pounds, big, feisty turtles, which a lot of the sea turtle hospitals on the coast don't have the space to be able to hold animals that large.
Well, the loggerhead, somebody said they're the size of a Volkswagen Bug sometimes.
they can get very large, yeah. You can get upwards of 300 pounds. The ones we get are juveniles. They do come in. Yeah, anywhere from that 20 to 70 pounds. We have two resident green sea turtles on exhibit, so we're very familiar with the care of those guys.
Do you have to fine-tune environmental conditions for the different species?
So the species we get down here, they're all coming from the same area, so they all come in. But we have the ability to match our exhibit to the water that they came from.
Temperature, salinity.
Temperature, salinity, pH, all that stuff, we line up with it. And then we gradually bring them in, bring them up a little bit warmer, because the warmer the water is, the quicker they're going to heal. Along that whole time, they're being cared for by our staff, getting fed 3-4 times a day, medical care as needed. And then when we get ready for release, we go through this extensive program of getting those turtles prepped. So we'll drop that water temperature down a little bit lower to match where they're at. We'll increase the addition of live food, so we bring in live blue crabs. We have this whole checklist provided to us from Fish and Wildlife and NOAA. Go through this. Once it's ready, we're good to go with the turtles. We partnered with the Georgia Sea Turtle Center down on Jekyll Island in Georgia. It was actually pretty cool because we were able to purchase satellite tags to place in some of our loggerhead sea turtles. So with the partnership with those guys, they came up here, taught our team how to attach these transmitters for these turtles. And then when we were ready to release them, we brought them down to their facility, prep stuff, made sure everything was working, and released off of their beaches. And then you can follow those trackers on our website to see where those turtles are, which is really cool, and it's capturing all this really interesting data about what happens once a cold stone sea turtle gets rehabilitated and goes back to the ocean. Where do they go? And you can track all of that on the website, and they get pretty far out.
And what's the website?
It's wondersofwildlife.org, and then there's a conservation page that has a whole section on our great sea turtle kind of rehabilitation. So these next two spaces were utilized for one of our new exhibits and just our overall jellyfish care and culture. Jellyfish are very interesting animals to keep. They require a lot of unique foods, unique tanks. As jellyfish's life cycles go, they're short. They go through seasonal blooms, public aquariums. So this lab was kind of built so that we could work on our sustainability with. This is our live food rooms. So our team cultures two different types of algae. We have this nice bright green one and then this kind of orange red one. And then they also culture rotifers, which is this other green water here. And then we have brine shrimp in these two big cones, which is like your sea monkeys.
Where are these native to? What habitat?
The species we culture the most right now and for exhibit is South American sea nettles. So they're up and down that coast of that. They're a large pelagic jellies. Their bell size can get, and we've seen some of them, you know, about the size of a beach ball. They're really, really cool. They're just one of my favorite jellies, to be honest. That's why I think they're really cool. But it's really cool what the team did here. So when we're going through targeting what we wanted for display, we identified this as a good species. So they live a little bit longer. They get very large. We have a very big exhibit. So we were able to bring in some different populations from other zoos and aquariums and vendors. And we were successful with actually starting a culture on these systems, which we're one of the first ones to be able to do that. And if you know anything about jellyfish life cycle, it's a little bit odd and kind of tricky. So, you know, these jellyfish, there's males and females in here. The cool thing about jelly culture is with adjustments of water quality or their husbandry, we can get those jellies to strobilate, which would essentially means it starts building new jellies. So on that polyp, which is like that sea anemone thing, a bunch of little jellies would start to stack like dinner plates. And when they're ready and when we can say, hey, we're gonna go up 5 degrees, we're gonna make these guys strobilate, those little jellies start popping off of that stalk. And they pop, 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 pop into these little Euphyra, which are in this tank. So you can kind of see those. Those are teeny, teeny, tiny jellies. And they continue to grow into the nettles, what we see today. These guys grow very quickly. Yeah, so 3-4 months from this stage to there, which is kind of where we target to stock our exhibit. And then we consecutively grow out and move through the systems to get our jellies to this kind of large, really kind of here. These are moon jellies. And then over in that other tank, we have bay nettles, which is another species our team is culturing for exhibit. So these moon jellies are kind of your typical one that you see. We grow them up for display, and they're also a food source for a lot of the nettles. So a lot of the nettles consume other jellyfish and small fish particles. So they're kind of a cool little...
These were not super rare or anything, right?
No, they're not. But I think they're really kind of cool because you can tie them into what's really going on in the ocean. A lot of times when there's different factors changing or there's different chemicals in it, you'll experience a jellyfish bloom or you see experience a big jellyfish die-off. So they're kind of good indicators of what's going on in that specific region. The species we have here are really cool. I think we're either only the one or two aquariums in the States that have them, so our guests really get to see some unique animals.
So you touched on momentarily they're an important indicator species.
Yeah, they can be. So a lot of times, like these nettles we see in this system will bloom when there's different stuff going on in the water or the water rises too warm, they'll kind of pop off more as a stressor. It can kind of be that first key that, hey, something might be going on in that area. We really journeyed around the world here at Wonders of Wildlife. We started off in our aquatic holding building. All of our animals that come into the aquarium get treated before they go, and also where we do our cold stunned sea turtle rehab each year over there. Looked at our jelly culture and some of the cool stuff our team was doing there, and then walked through the Wonders of Wildlife journey through the open ocean exhibits, to the Amazon exhibit, to the jellyfish, through the swamps, to the caves, and saw lots of really fun stuff today with you guys. Well, we've been awarded at America's Best Aquarium from US Today multiple times now, and I think it's very clear to see that when you're walking through our place, just with not only the exhibits and the care of the animals, but how immersive you become walking through the exhibits. I mean, you really feel like you're right there. Next.
And USA Today awards are usually reader polls.
Yeah, so it's definitely membership and guest visitors coming through here seeing what we have to offer, and we're a really wonderful gem of a place here in the middle of Missouri, in the middle of the States. My name is Ben Houghton, and I am the curator of life sciences here for Wonders of Wildlife.
Ben, thank you so much.
Yeah, come back anytime.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.